America, Houston, we've filled up the DSE with science data, and so if you're through with the TV rehearsal, we'd like the S-band aux switch back to science so we can get the rest of the data real time.
Okay, we just finished, and going to science.
Roger. Thank you. Go ahead.
Cordy, how far out are we?
How far out? 100,000 miles, approximately.
Okay, thank you.
This is Apollo Control at 283 hours, 58 minutes, and we're about 9 minutes now from the start of the televised press conference with the Apollo 17 crew. The network controller has checked out the lines from Goldstone, California to Houston.
A little more precise answer, you're 97,500 miles, and you passed the halfway point about 2 hours ago, and we're going to have a sight hand over here on the hour.
Got all that, Gordy. Thank you.
The television pictures from the spacecraft will be received at the 210-foot dish antenna at Goldstone, California, and relayed to Houston.
Tower Houston, America.
Go ahead, America.
We'll stand by for your call at Palm for TV.
Roger. America Houston, we're ready for TV.
Roger, Gordy.
Roger.
And let us know when you've got a picture.
I'll do.
America, Houston, we've got a picture. It looks good, looks in focus, and we see the flag and the patch.
Okay. Here's the crew of Apollo 17, Spaceship America.
Roger, Apollo 17. If you're ready for the questioning, I'll begin.
Go ahead, Gordo.
Okay, as usual in these in-flight news conferences, the questions that will be asked of you were prepared by correspondents covering the Apollo 17 mission at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. They will be read exactly as written, and in the order determined by the newsman. The first question is for Jack Schmidt. If you as a geologist were coming home from a field trip on Earth, you'd be drafting a preliminary report and discussing it with fellow geologists. In terms understandable to laymen, can you summarize what you would be saying in your preliminary report about your field trip to Taurus Littro?
Well, I'll give that a try, Gordy. I think the thing we had hoped to accomplish at Taurus Littro was to look at as broad a spectrum of the history of the moon as possible in one small area as a concluding flight to the Apollo program. And I think we did that. I think we did look at some of the oldest rocks that it is possible to see with our capability in the breccias of the south and north massifs. I think we saw some intermediate age rocks of fairly unexpected character, I believe, in the subfloor crystalline or igneous rocks, the gabbro, as we call them there. And we also understood, I think, that those rocks, in fact, had intruded into the breccias of the North Massif. We found, I believe, at the crater Van Sergue on the third EVA that the regolith or the garden zone on top of that subfloor gabbro or the igneous rocks was quite thick or appears to be very thick, which is an expected result, and will hopefully those rocks will have much information about a fairly extended period of lunar erosion. And we found that there was indeed a dark mantle over the area of there was indeed a dark mantle over the area of variable thickness, but apparently of relatively recent age, and that in turn had a light mantle of material of which we do not yet understand, and I think that the samples are going to have to tell that story. It may well be a landslide that has come off the South Massif. Possibly as important as any finding, we found that even later than that relatively young light mantle deposit or possible avalanche, we have alteration reminiscent of the alteration by hot waters or hot gases on Earth, and that was the orange, appears to be the orange soil that we found around the crater Shorty. And subsequently in orbit, we started to pick up, and particularly through Ron Evans' efforts, pick up more and more of the apparent evidence of such alteration taking place in fairly recent time on the moon. All of those items, I think, are extremely significant and go through the full range of our present knowledge of lunar history. And a report I would write would initially summarize that particular sequence of events.
Question number two is for Jack again. What other probable explanations besides volcanic origins do you have for the orange rock and colored soil that you found at Shorty Crater?
Well, they don't necessarily have to be volcanic, Gordy. I refer to them as alteration, and much of the hydrothermal or hot water alteration that we see on Earth is related to recent volcanism or ancient volcanism. But also we know of that kind of alteration of pre-existing materials to take place as a result of just fluids working their way up through the Earth's crust, and I presume that such a process is also possible on the moon. The ones we saw seem to be associated with areas of dark mantle of various types, and most of the photographic evidence we have is that those dark mantle deposits are associated with volcanism, but it is not necessarily proved yet, I believe, that the orange soils or the alterations we've seen are volcanic. However, the process would be a related process. That is one of internal origin.
Third question is for Cernan or Schmidt. Your voices are so much alike that it is unclear to some of us which one of you found the orange rock and who first spotted the layer of orange soil on the crater rim.
Jack found it. He uncovered it as he was walking on the on the rim, and we worked with that. And then as I went around the crater to take the stereo base pan from within the crater, I could see alterations radially down from the rim further beyond where we were working down to the center. I don't think that question of who found it is specifically as important as that we were there with the equipment and the training jointly to not only recognize that, but to take advantage of having recognized it. And I hope that we did.
Okay, the next one's for Ron Evans. Why do you think you were able to see so much orange material from lunar orbit after your partners had found some on the ground, when none of the previous Apollo crews reported seeing anything but grays, tans, and browns?
Well, I think one thing, we were essentially in a different orbit than some of the other crews that have been up there before. Even though each of us has a color tone in our own eyes, what we come up with, I think, is a function of pretty much what you'd like to believe or what you'd like to see on a thing. If you feel it has a tint of orange with it, and this is in a new area, that we really hadn't flown over that much. And this is primarily where we were seeing this type of thing was on the western rim of Serenitatis. And in some of the, at least it looks like, known volcanic deposits along the rim of Serenitatis.
Gordy, let me add quickly that there's no such thing as a truly objective observer. And I believe that once you start looking for something, and when Ron heard about what we were doing, I'm sure he started looking himself and what we had seen, and that leads you to see things. Now, that's not seeing things that aren't there. It makes you look for things that are there. And that's extremely important, and that's where the kind of training all three of us have had, I think, has made it possible for us to find a lot of things that might not otherwise been found.
This one is addressed to all three crewmen. What will you remember most about this mission? Now that you are returning home from what may be the last lunar exploration of this century, what short-range and long-range plans do each of you have for the future?
Well, my short-range plans are certainly to enjoy Christmas with my family, think about the flight, get its data down on paper. My long-range plans are to turn around and look at the next flight, whatever that may be, and put my efforts and experience towards that flight and get to work on it.
I think my short range plans, of course, first of all, tomorrow I want to make a real good reentry, and that's the real short range part of it. From that point on, as I mentioned before, I think we have a responsibility. At least I feel that we have a responsibility to share our experiences with the rest of the people, not only in the United States, but with the people of the rest of the world. Beyond that, I also have a strong desire to continue participating in manned spaceflight in whatever capacity I might be able to.
Well, I can do nothing but echo Gene and Ron's words, and maybe add, Gordy, that I hope that through the next few years I'll be able to make some contributions that guarantees that this Apollo 17 flight is not the last exploration program in this century in space.
Again, for all the crew, throughout the mission there were periodic reports from each of you about gastric distress in one form or another. Does this trouble make you think that the three Skylab missions of 28, 56, and 56 days scheduled for next year are too ambitious?
No, not at all. I don't think they're too ambitious, Gordy. I think that's the reason we're flying each and every one of these flights one at a time, is to find out if there really are potential problems in diet and what have you. And I think we solved a lot of them from Apollo 15 and 16, and those few that we had, I'm sure we can solve accordingly prior to Skylab flying.
I don't think I can add anything to that.
I think we've made a big improvement over the problems that occurred on Apollo 16, and I think as a result of our observations in conjunction with the medical people primarily at NASA, that solutions, very clear solution, will be found for Skylab and any other mission we want to fly.
Okay. For Ron Evans, you seemed almost euphoric during your spacewalk yesterday, and other spacewalkers before you seem to have had the same reaction to the experience. Can you describe what it was like and how it made you feel?
Well, I think for those of you who had the opportunity to watch yesterday, it's pretty obvious how I felt out there. I'm not sure euphoric is the word. It's an opportunity. Well, to me, I guess it was an opportunity to be what I call a real spaceman. You know, you're out there in the deepness of space with nothing but your spacesuit on you, and you're doing a job that has to be done. Now, we're riding around in space out here, and this is in a capsule, and we look out the window, you know, but it's a nice, firm feeling. It's a solidly built vehicle, and you get the zero-G effect on the thing, but you don't get the feeling of really getting out and walking in space. And once I became accustomed to what it was like in the EVA environment, then you relax, and you take it easy, and you try to accomplish what you can, and observe what you can, and really enjoy it. And I think I really enjoyed it.
I had a hold of his umbilical most of that time, and I didn't notice that he was ready to jump out into space, if that's the kind of euphoria you're talking about.
Okay. For Eugene Cernan and any other later comments, you've talked a lot about this mission being the end of the beginning, but a lot of people don't agree. Recognizing the United States is stopping lunar exploration for the foreseeable future, how do you feel?
When we look back at the Apollo program, I don't think anyone can privately to themselves or publicly say that this truly, indeed, has really been a beginning of man's really first venture out into deep space. And once there's a beginning, there's a continuation. The probing into deep space by man, the next landing on the moon, a trip to Mars may not be for 10 years, a decade, it may not be till the end of the century. But I personally have faith that it will happen. I think it's a restraint, an abnormal restraint of man's intellect at this point in time, to restrict or tend to think that he will restrict his own feeling of exploration, his own quest for knowledge. He's had an opportunity, he's proved that he can take advantage of this opportunity, and I think that the nature of mankind is going to just press on. That's why I believe, not probably Apollo 17, yes, it's the beginning, but the whole Apollo program is really the true beginning of what's to come in the future. And I firmly believe that we can look back in 100 years or 200 years and the 5-year or 10-year period of time that we may be slowed down here. I think we'll be lost in the merit of what's really accomplished during the next several decades.
The next question is for all the crew. The American people seem to be getting fairly blasé about space flight, and television coverage of Apollo 17 has been at a minimum. But this is not the case abroad. For example, in the Republic of Zaire, the former Belgian Congo, an estimated 20 million people are watching extensive coverage on TV sets set up in the villages. What do you have to say to the people of underdeveloped nations?
Well, Gordy, first of all, I'm not sure that the amount of television coverage is necessarily a measure of the interest of the American people. I don't have those figures at hand. I'm sorry to hear that the adventures we had and the insight that maybe we gained into not only ourselves but to the history of the solar system was not shared extensively with the American people, if that's true. As far as the rest of the world is concerned, and also the people of the United States who may not participate as much in the affluence that we all would like to share, I think that what space flight in general and the Apollo program in particular has offered is many new avenues from which we can provide for those people abroad and for our own people the kind of quality of life and in the material, including the material quality of life, that everybody aspires to. And I think we've just begun the adventure of understanding how what we have learned and how we have learned to do it in space can be applied to these particular kinds of problems. That is one of the great challenges that I think NASA and other agencies within the United States government and other governments abroad have, is to use this base of technological information now for their own people.
I'd like to just add to that very briefly, Gordy, that America has led the way into space in the past. I believe we will in the future. But a point I tried to get across several days earlier in this flight is that the real promise of the future for all the peoples of the Earth is to weld themselves into a coherent group of people who can live and work together and then enjoy all the benefits and all the knowledge that is to come from future space explorations. I think we are doing this not just as Americans, but as human beings. And everyone throughout these countries, throughout the world, who are watching this right now are also human beings, no different than we are. It's their accomplishment as well as it is ours.
Question 11 is for Jack. Do you think the United States waited too long to send a geologist to the moon?
We're grinning because I think we predicted that question. Gordy, I think the United States waited too long to go into space in the first place, and I think they're probably going to wait too long to go back. I will always feel that way, no matter who goes or what qualifications he may have or may think he has. I think that the most important thing that maybe I have done is to be able to show that we can build a transportation system that allows you to fly people of a wide variety of disciplines. And I think that we have shown that, and I think that it's occurred at about as soon as possible within the Apollo program.
The last couple questions are in a lighter vein and for Ron Evans. There's been a lot of discussion about a missing pair of scissors in the command module. Who really lost the scissors?
Well, I think it must have been one of those other guys because I was asleep and I got up the next morning and it was gone.
Didn't have him on my watch.
And also, Ron, did the squeaking of those mice on board keep you awake?
No, the mice really did. There are plenty of other things going on inside the spacecraft here that we can hardly even hear the mice. As a matter of fact, I really haven't heard them yet.
Okay, this completes the list of questions as submitted by the newsmen here in Houston. There are a little less than 7 minutes left on our scheduled time for any other further remarks you might like to make.
Yeah, Gordy, I think we'd like to take this opportunity to each say a word or two.
Well, I just briefly, Gordy, I feel that I have done something that's fairly significant here in my life. I hope it, and will do everything I can to see that it is not the most significant thing I ever do. But I feel that the fact that I had the opportunity is due in large part to the tangible and intangible effects that my mother and father had on my life, and to them I send my thanks. And I hope that I continue to live up to their expectations.
You know, on Apollo 17 here, we've had two outstanding vehicles, and that's, don't let me get you wrong, I'm not discounting the booster either, but I've watched a lot of people work on a lot of spacecraft, and I'm really proud to be able to say that all of the vehicles that have been associated with Apollo 17 have been outstanding, and the reason they're outstanding is because the people have been working on them, and I'd like to give our thanks and the well done to the people that worked on our spacecraft.
Gordy, prior to leaving, and I guess I can certainly assume during the flight, we've carried many, many well wishes and carried many prayers aboard from people throughout the world. I personally believe that those prayers played no small part in any success that we were able to achieve on this flight. I ask those people, however, to continue their prayers, in particular for some of our friends and some of our comrades who are still in Southeast Asia, POWs, MIAs, who may not, although God willing, I hope they will, but who may not have the opportunity to get home and enjoy the Christmas that we're looking forward to. And with that, from Apollo 17, Spacecraft America, on December 18, 1972, we all wish you a very, very Merry Christmas and a happy holiday season. Godspeed and God bless you all.
Thank you, guys. That was a good show. We enjoyed every minute.
Okay, Gordy, I presume you want to go back to science and the comm configuration, and we're getting squared away here for a big 48.
Okay, that's affirmative. Back to science, please.
If you'd like, I'll go ahead and run over now.
No, we want to hold the maneuver till 5-5.
Okay. Thank you.
America, Houston.
Go ahead.
Okay, we're ready to go with that VERP 48, and then the VERP 49 as listed a little bit early here. That'll put us in the hot soak attitude.
Okay, Gord, I'll be with you in about 30 seconds.
Okay.
Houston, America is on her way.
Okay, doke.
15's getting the high gain up if you want it.
Hey, we think we're already on it, Jack.
Well, I meant to have the other angles.
I think you can just leave it alone. It is holding from during the maneuver and should hold to the end of it.
Okay. The maneuver's over, Gordy.
Roger.
Now we're even.
Go ahead.
Okay, Gordy, with these relatively fixed attitudes most of the afternoon, we got the tunnel not totally dry, but the forward hatch is awful wet. I just thought I'd throw that out.
Okay.
This is Apollo Control at 285 hours, 14 minutes. At the present time in Mission Control, we've got a group of engineers from the Crew Systems Division clustered around the Capcom console going over a set of recommended procedures which Capcom Gordon Fullerton will be discussing with Ron Evans for fixing his communications carrier, the so-called Snoopy hat that the crew wears that has the earphones and microphone attachments built in. Evans reported several days ago that the comm carrier, communications carrier, was intermittent, and last night he took it apart, looked inside, and found that, in fact, a couple of wires had broken and made a temporary fix. The procedures that we'll be reading up to him are to ensure that, insofar as possible, that the Snoopy hat communications carrier is fixed up to work properly during entry. If for some reason the Snoopy hat carrier couldn't be used, Evans would plan to wear the lightweight headset using the Snoopy hat to hold it in position. But the preferable arrangement during entry would be to have a working comm carrier built into the Snoopy hat. Apollo 17 at this time is 93,270 nautical miles from Earth, and the speed is 5,444 feet per second.
Stand by, we're checking. Not yet. Temperatures aren't up as high as they'd like, and we'd like to hold 5 minutes at least.
Okay, we'll just stand by for your call on the maneuver.
Okay.
This is Apollo Control at 285 hours, 24 minutes. Here in Mission Control, we're at the present time being paid a visit by a jolly gentleman in a red cap and coat with white whiskers who is going around the room dispensing things from a bag of goodies. Flight Director Chuck Lewis out of Santa's bag is a toy flight director's console for Skylab, complete with spinners. Can of Skylab food for Capcom Gordon Fullerton.
America, Houston.
Good, Houston.
You guys aren't going to believe this, but Santa Claus just walked in the Moker with a long white beard and red suit, black boots and all, and he's passing out presents to everybody.
How'd he get there before we did? We just saw him up there about five days ago.
Well, he beat you back.
Gordy, I'd believe anything. You got anything with our name on it?
I'll ask him. Haven't seen anything yet. America, Houston, you can go ahead and start the VRP 49 maneuver. Have a change in the high gain angles, though, as printed there. Make it a plus 30 and 190 instead of minus 40 and 90. That's a plus 30 and 190 on the high gain.
Okay, I got them, Gordy.
Flight Surgeon John Ziegelschmid received a small telephone for private conversations out of Santa's bag.
Gordy, when you get a minute, would you ask one of the surgeons there what my heart rate peaked out at in the last 15 minutes or so?
Okay, I'll do that. I'm just looking at some of the presents here. Mine was a little Skylab food can, flip-top can. It says Capcom's post-flight dinner. And I'm pretty sure there's absolutely nothing in it, although I'm afraid to pull the lid off. The surgeon's got a little plastic telephone that says for private conversations only. And your heart rate went...
I'd be more worried about what might be in that can, Gordy.
Yeah, I am. Gino's heart rate peaked at 115 to 120.
Okay, what did the LFPs peak at? He wasn't doing anything. I'm not even on biomed, as a matter of fact, Gordy.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake. Not the surgeon's. That was the LFPs. Stovall in the front row there got a little shovel-like gadget with a sign on it that says trenching tool.
give him a coin. A flippable coin.
He's got a coin, I get it. It says CSM active on both sides.
Good, that's what I figured.
America Houston, we're ready for a spin up now.
Okay.
Okay, it's looking good.
Houston.
America Houston, we'd like to throw a few switches on panel 230 and try to get the HF antennas retracted. Over.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, first of all, radar off.
Okay, Gordy, the radar is off.
Okay, and then HF antenna number 2, retract, and give us a mark, please. It should take about a little over 2 minutes.
Okay, going to retract, mark it. Oh, HF 2? Gordy, I started 1, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Keep it, it doesn't matter. Just keep working on 1 there. Keep it in retract.
Okay, it's in retract. And stay there.
America Houston, as you come up on a roll of 30, we'd like you to, okay, break. We would like the antenna 1 switched off now.
It is off.
And we had a good retract. Okay, for the guy in the...
Gordy?
Go ahead.
It was still Barber Bowl when I went off.
Okay, that's the one we had trouble with before. That's what we expected.
Okay,
you can go number 2 to retract now.
Okay, number 2, retract, mark.
Okay, and for whoever's driving the spaceship there, we'd like to stop the roll... Stop the PTC at a roll angle of 30 instead of what's in the flight plan. That's 30 degrees. And you're passing through 73 right now. Over.
Okay, Gary, I got it. I'm looking at 920. We'll stop it at 30.
Okay, and I have different high gains to go with that attitude. There'll be minus 24 and 206.
Okay, we got
Jack, Houston, you should be retracted now and have a gray, and you can go off if you do.
That's affirmed, and congratulations. And the switch is off.
Okay, and those high gain angles I passed you are probably misleading. It looks like it'll, the high gain ought to just hang on when you stop this maneuver.
Okay.
America Houston, it'll be about 5-6 minutes till we finish the dump before we can go ahead with that Verb 49, in case you got something to do.
Okay, Gordy, thank you.
Okay, America, we're ready for the maneuver now.
Okay, Houston, here she comes. America's on her way again.
Okay.
Gordo, I see two DAP changes here. You want to change this one during the maneuver or after the maneuver? And then the next one before the next maneuver.
We want the DAP load after you get to attitude, and then the other DAP load before you start the next maneuver.
That sounds good here. Okay.
America Houston, we need the UV cover closed. The sun's getting in there.
Closed, Gordy.
Thank you. We should be safe now. Open the UV cover, please.
Gordy, it's open.
Thank you.
Doesn't it bother you to wield such power, Gordy?
I'm getting accustomed to it.
Gordy, for the first time in seemingly several days, we see the Earth.
Raj. Standing by for a weather report.
Great, I don't know whether or not there's any weather down there.
You can't see too much of it, huh?
No, sir. You're down to a fingernail, if you'll pardon the expression. It, let's see. It's about a, they think, Gene, about a 1/8 Earth, 1/6 to 1/8 Earth. Got a picture, Ron. You can see it later.
go ahead.
Okay, Gordo, 286, 52 on a flight plan, and 287.40. Is there an update on that CMP put his biomed harness on, I guess, 4 to 6 hours ago?
Yeah, let me check on that. There was something on this when I left last night, but I had to get the latest here.
Okay.